very nice to be here. And yes, I spend most of my time in Sri Lanka, but every year now I seem to come back to Melbourne to do teaching, and then of course come to Perth, because I was born in Perth and ordained in Perth with Ajahn Brahm, and actually spent 9.5 years at Bodhinyana Monastery, Serpentine Monastery. So it's very nice to come back. It's always very interesting for me. I sometimes think, well, will I have culture shock coming back to Australia? In 5 minutes I'm acclimatised, I'm back in Australia. But Sri Lanka, of course, is very different from Australia, and living in a Buddhist country, very nice, I enjoy it. I live in a forest, in a cave on the side of a mountain, and it's not like a caveman's cave, it's a very comfortable cave, a comfy cave, that's what I call it, with a bathroom and also what's called a kitchen. So people ask me, what do you cook, Bhante? They say, what do you cook? And I say, water. That's what I cook. But now, this evening I'd like to introduce the meditation for those that are new to the meditation. Just give you an idea of... good, thank you. Very good, thank you.
We'll recite that first.
Yeah. Yes, we'll do that. And this is... We'll do the... I'm going to move on too fast. The Buddhist words on loving kindness, and these are very nice. They're very good. They're lovely words to chant, but better to take it in, to practice it. You know, to have loving kindness in the heart. This is a wonderful quality of that the Buddha encouraged a great deal. So we can get together. I think it's very good here. People are used to chanting every week, so very good.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Very good.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Oh, yes, there we are. Yeah. Very good. Oh. good for me to see the sheep actually, because in Melbourne we do a slightly different, a few different words. In a, instead of saying may all beings be happy, they have may all beings be at ease.
Oh.
So it's a bit different. I have to watch myself sometimes when I'm in Melbourne and come here. So I think happy is a better translation actually. So ease is nice, it's okay, but happiness is certainly I think closer to the Pali word. So, yes. So I'd just like to give a little bit of an introduction for the new people too, just to mention. It should be fairly self-evident because there's a guided meditation, so that's very easy to follow. But the main principles for meditation, one, you know, the essential things actually, are that we should be in a comfortable position and we should be relaxed. Of course, you know, it's good to have a fairly straight back, but not stiff or not tense, definitely not. I think the people in the lounge, this is a new addition to the lounge here, so it reminds me of cinemas, the lounge.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what
the lounge.
But so it's very good for if we have the back straight but not stiff, you know, so this is very good because that posture gives a bit more energy to the meditation. I notice if I rest against a wall or something, comfortable as it may be, sometimes it's much easier to drop off. So that's very useful, the posture. But we should be comfortable and we should be relaxed. And that's essential for the meditation. Because if we're not relaxed, the mind definitely won't become peaceful. If the body's not relaxed, it's very difficult for the mind to relax. So this is an important principle to begin with. And of course, as you probably know from many of you from Ajahn Brahm's meditations, guided meditations, he spends a lot of time on relaxing the body.
Mm.
So I initially, I do this too, but my own way of course, and I start out with a physical workout, which is just to arrange the body, but to give it a bit of a twist, so you know, the hips and the shoulders, and raise the shoulders, just so we settle into the body, and also I usually tighten the face, and then let go of it, just so we let go physically. And then after that, I usually do a mental relaxation. Then I do an intention. It's always good to have an idea of why you're meditating. It's very easy if you don't have, I don't think Ajahn Brahm does this very much, but I always do it, which is to have an idea why I'm meditating. Like, I'm just going to be here for the meditation. You know, just to let the mind know what the purpose of this time is. So it delimits it. So it doesn't, it's not a time for me to solve the problems from the day. It's not a time for me to think about tomorrow, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say, or whatever. It's a time for meditation. Sometimes it's good to think of it as holiday time, something like that. It's a real break. So it's very good to have an idea of the intention and give that a signal to the mind that this is what we're doing now. And very interestingly, the mind will keep that, will keep it in mind, actually. So that during the meditation, it will stay on track, usually, just by itself. We don't have to force it or anything like that. So good to have an intention. Then I usually relax the body mentally. And this is actually a far deeper relaxation than the physical, I find. And when we do this, often you can feel the mind sink into the body. There's this sinking feeling that I get quite often. And if I get it while I'm doing the guided meditation, then good, it's going well. So you can often get this. And for some, in some traditions, some types of meditation, this is considered to be meditation. They call it relaxation response, just relaxing the body very fully. And I don't know if you've heard of Sir Ian Gawler. He's a famous, he's a meditation teacher, but
yeah.
Also he works with people with terminal illnesses, very life-threatening illnesses. And you know, he teaches this style of meditation, and it's very effective. People find it very useful. One of the advantages is there's no words involved, so it's moving away from thinking a bit, so that's quite good. So relaxing the body mentally is very important, and then usually coming into the present moment, just letting the mind know this is, we're just here in the present moment. We don't have to be in the past or the future. And then going, in this case, to the breath coming in and out. And it's a natural flow of the breath. We're not doing pranayama. We're not holding the breath. We're not changing the breath in any way. So this is just the natural flow of the breath. And when we do that, it's very relaxing for the mind. And the mind can settle down on it. And the point of the meditation is for the mind to come together with the meditation object, whether it be the breath, whether it be loving-kindness. In Buddhism, there's many different subjects for meditation. In fact, walking meditation and so on. So this is very this is the aim of it, is to bring the mind together, for the mind to, as it were, only have that as its focus. And when that happens, of course, you know, then there's a lot of happiness, there's joy and happiness, we say, and then the mind even becomes even more focused by itself. We don't force it. And one of the approaches that I teach, and I think is very, very useful for meditation, is to develop a positive emotion, develop a positive emotion to use during the meditation. I have many that I use myself. You know, positive emotions include things like, watch this, loving kindness. This feeling of loving kindness is friendliness, wishing well for oneself and others, kindness. There is contentment. On the weekend, I was teaching contentment meditation. Happy to be here is what I call it. Happy to be here. I use things like the inner smile to bring up a very positive state of mind. It's actually contentment again. When you have this feeling of an inner smile, and you bring that into the meditation, you bring that into the present moment. You bring it into the body when you're relaxing the body, you bring it into the present moment, and you bring it into the breath, and you combine it. I usually combine it with breathing in whatever this positive emotion is. And that way, the meditation subject becomes much more interesting. For most people, the breath is not exciting. And most people hardly ever notice the breath, unless it's difficult to breathe. Unless we've got a cold, or we have breathing problems like asthma or so on. Most people don't pay much attention to it. And yet, it's our lifeline. So it is quite important in reality. So this is the approach that I often teach. And it comes from the understanding in Buddhism, it's an essential feature or principle, you'd say, of all spiritual traditions, is to avoid or let go of the negative and to develop and maintain the positive. And this is actually the essence of the Buddha's teaching, and one of his very early teachings focused on that. And this evening, the positive emotion that I'm going to emphasize, or I use, is going to be giving, because actually when we give, it can bring up happiness and joy in the mind, depending on how we do it. Giving is actually a very good way for me to bring up happiness and joy, and the guided meditation will use that theme. And the other side of giving, of course, what's the other side? Receiving. Getting, yes. Then we can develop the other positive emotion of being thankful, being grateful. And this is a very good one, actually. It's like a smorgasbord of positive emotions one can use in the meditation. But the advantage of this is that it's not only for the meditation. These are emotions that are useful to develop in daily life, because there are many, many times we need a more positive frame of mind. And one of the things you notice that's very obvious in the Buddha's teaching too, you see that it's much easier if you develop a positive mind state, a positive emotion. It's much easier to deal with the... Oh, look, that's going in and out. Deal with the negative. In fact, if we acknowledge the negative and we develop a positive mind state, this can often, as it were, reduce the negative and bring out the positive. If we develop positive mind states as a habit, if we have a lot of loving kindness in mind, it's very hard. There's no room for negative mind states to much degree. So this is an important principle of the Buddha's teaching, is to let go, avoid or let go of the negative and develop the positive. And it's all about the mind, getting to know your mind. And this is where our experience of life, whether it be pleasant or unpleasant, is coming from, just from the mind. And we all know that, you know, in this room, there's probably, I don't know how many of us, 50, 60 different takes on what's happening here now. Some pleasant, some unpleasant, maybe it's a bit cold, I don't know what's going to happen, or, you know, so on. I hope it doesn't go on too long. Something like that. Whatever it is. So we all have these different mindsets, mind states. But the important thing for us to develop is positive ones, and to realize we don't get much out of negative ones. You know, people, we have the ability to develop whatever we wish, and people do. And they don't realize, quite often, people don't realize that they can be developing negative mind states. They can get more and more angry, get angry easier and easier, can get into a rage. And they don't realize, I'm developing this, I'm cultivating this. But it's very much the case, any emotion we repeat again and again, that will become the habit. So if it's a negative one, we can really strengthen it. We can become quite adept. We can become masters of rage and anger. But will it make us happy? I don't think so. There's with anger, isn't it, and rage, there is a short-lived sense of power and often a sense of being right, justified. But there's also a great sense of being burnt out. Nobody wants to be near you, and that sort of thing. You know, because an angry person's not somebody that makes many friends. So this is up to us what we develop. And I was going to read some words of the Buddha about giving, because we're talking about giving, and this evening that's going to be the theme. And this I like very much, actually. It's one of my favourites on giving. And this is where the Buddha said, "Monks, if beings knew, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would they allow the stain of meanness to obsess them and take root in their minds. Even if it were their last morsel, their last mouthful, they would not enjoy eating without having shared it, if there were someone to share it with." And he says, "But monks, as beings, do not know, as I know, the results of giving and sharing. They eat without having given, and the stain of meanness obsesses them and takes root in their minds." So I find that really, really nice, you know, that the Buddha was putting so much emphasis on giving. And of course, you know, it points to the fact, why would he make a big emphasis on giving? Do people have any idea? Why would he say giving is so important? Yes? No takers?
Because someone would be on the receiving end.
True. Someone will be on the receiving end. That's true.
That's good.
That's good. I think the main purpose in this, the way he was talking here, is because it makes what we say karma. Karma, do people know what karma is?
Yep.
You know, the idea, if you do good, then there are good results. If you do bad things or negative things, then there are negative results. And I don't think anybody has to be, you don't have to be Einstein to see how that works sometimes in your daily life. You say something nice to a person, they usually come back in a similar vein. You say something nasty, and it comes back pretty quick too. Or if you do something as well. So this is one of the important messages of giving. You know, there's a famous Christian saying, isn't there? What's the saying? Do you remember that saying?
Reaping and sowing, is it?
Yeah, it's reaping and sowing. But give and you shall receive. Yeah, I like that. That's really Buddhist. It's really Christian, but it's really Buddhist. Because if we give, we get. And what do we get? You know, sometimes it's material things, if that's what people are aiming at, wanting. But of course, sometimes it's things like happiness and joy. And these are the things that really the Buddha is talking about. Because then you're in the area of the mind. Then you can use this happiness in your meditation, in your daily life. This is where it's very, very useful. To get a lot of joy out of it, happiness out of it. And it's not as if people are giving. You know, in our society, people do give a lot. But often they don't think of it as giving. You know, like parents are giving a lot to their children. But they don't think of it as giving because they think, well, you have to do it, don't you? You have to look after the kids. You know, and so on. And there are many, many ways we give to people at work, as I say, in the family, and that people we meet in daily life. Nearly many things we are giving. And this is a very important perception to develop, the idea of giving, and get joy from it. And then that actually enriches our life, and that's a very important part of the giving, the process of giving. So, and Buddha was very much encouraging it to generate this happiness and joy. And I like one saying I heard recently in a talk by, actually, the Hare Krishna monk, actually, and he said, if we want to get, we may not. But if we want to give, who can stop us?
Mm.
It's lovely, isn't it? It's very nice. Yeah. He said, if you want to be loved, you may not be. But if you want to love, who can stop you? You know, very nice message, and it's very true.
Mm.
It's a very different dynamic. If you want to get, you know, it's a feeling of need, it's a feeling of narrowness, only interested in what I need, what I want, and all this sort of what I like, what I don't like, that sort of stuff. But when you want to give, it's a far more positive emotion. It's an expansive emotion, and it can give rise to happiness. And this is a very important emotion to develop. You know, it's an easy way to develop happiness from giving. Unfortunately, we have, you know, oftentimes, isn't it, we have ritualized giving like Christmas and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people miss the message because they feel they have to do it. And they don't enjoy the giving, you know, they get stressed. They don't get a sense of happiness and joy. They get stressed. Have I got all the presents for everyone? Has Auntie got the present? I've got the right thing. Is it the right colour? Etc. But in Buddhism, we encourage people just to give and not to worry so much about the gift so much. Because, as we often say, it's the thought that counts. It's how we're giving that's important, not so much the gift itself. Because the gift, it may be good, it may be what they need, it may not be. But if we give with a very good heart, that actually can sometimes be the present. I know from being a monk, people give a lot to monks actually. And sometimes people give with such joy, such happiness. And you can see it in their eyes that whatever they give is fine. It's not the gift, the real gift is that joy and that happiness, actually. So this is the best gift, actually, is to give with a wholeheartedly and to give with a lot of joy, happiness, getting a lot out of it. And that way we're making use of something for our own spiritual development that we do a lot of. And it's just a way of looking at the world differently, you know. Instead of looking at the world from the sense of what I need, what I want, which is the way we usually start the day. If we start the day thinking of what can I give, that's different. And there's a monk in Thailand who, Ajahn Brahmali, one of the monks of the monastery, this monk in Thailand for his loving kindness. And he asked him, how do you develop your loving kindness? And he says, when I wake up in the morning, I think, what can I give to the people in this monastery? What can I give to the world? And that's such a different way of waking up and looking at the world. Not usually most people wake up and we think, oh my God, what have I got to do today? You know, what have I got to get? You know, oh no, I've got to meet this person, and so on. So this attitude of giving is very, is a completely different way. It's much more open. And if we can do that, what a difference it makes. And in actual fact, if we come to the day, I've noticed it with my own practice actually, if you come with that mindset of giving, the context that you have with people is different actually. It's different. It's like you're much more open, and somehow they pick it up too without you saying it. They pick it up as well. So these are very important things that we can, and one of the very important things about giving is that we feel good about ourselves. It's very good for self-esteem. You know, when you give, it's a feeling of, you know, of expansiveness. You know, when you give, you're wealthy actually, even if you haven't got a lot. So giving is something that's very useful for all of us to develop. It's a very healthy, positive emotion. And as I say, when I do the guided meditation, I'll use the idea of giving in the guided meditation, and it's fairly easy to follow. And always with the meditation I do, towards the end of it, I'd like to reflect on how I feel now, to just have a look at how the meditation has been, how I feel. Is it any different from when I started? And if and what caused it? What caused it? What brought this up? You know, so this is very useful to reflect. And then I like to share that energy of the meditation with everyone that is around me, and the family and friends, and with all beings. Because then, when we're meditating, we're not just doing it for ourselves. I think it's quite important, actually. I like it. And then the next thing I do is have an aspiration to develop more of that quality that I've been focusing on, like giving, contentment, loving kindness, to develop it in a daily life. Because as I say, developing it in meditation, formal meditation, you may do half an hour, whatever, but there is 23 and a half hours left of the day, some of that we're sleeping. So we need to develop those emotions during the day, and they're very, very useful emotions, pleasant emotions to develop. And then when we come to the meditation cushion, the walking path, the meditation is much easier because we've been developing wholesome mind states during the day, positive mind states during the day. Very easy then to settle down. And the last thing I usually do is anchor that feeling that we've developed during the meditation in the heart or in the mind. And I say to people that then we can remember it, we can go back to it any time during the day. So that gives you a rough idea of the guided meditation. It won't be any surprise. Well, there will be a few surprises perhaps. Yes? Questions, that's good. You can't hear?
Sorry, I don't mean to speak too much, but I've just come out of a week of rehab.
Yes, good. Very good.
The feeling I've got, I met 14 strange people who were from just a completely different range of upbringings and environments and all sorts of things. Development within those, always the next step. I've been coming here for a little while now.
Good.
I found this being really beneficial.
Good. Yeah, great.
Because, like, I think a lot of things they do with some of the other, I'm not going to knock the other people, because, like, you know, they're doing their bit, but I think you guys don't have any animosity towards anyone. They don't have any, you don't have any, preconceptions of.
Good.
Yeah. So I gained a lot from it.
Yeah, that's good.
Huge gain.
That's good. Yes.
I just want to tell people that, that I'm giving I'm like a 57 and it curves. It's pretty late in my life to start a sort of a road of recovery, but
Never too late. No, never. No, I think it's good. We're all on the road to recovery, actually, in one way or another. So it's good. No. And that's the essence of the Buddhist path, is actually acceptance and loving kindness for ourselves and others as well. Because we've all been, when we say in past lives, through many different experiences. So we have a very shared experience in a sense, not from this level. So we can do the meditation. I was going to mention one thing, very important thing about giving too, that oftentimes people only think of material things for giving. I just saw this note, actually. And actually, in this society, there are homeless people, there are people who are hard up, that's for sure. But most people have enough. The most important thing, the most rare gift you can give these days?
Your time.
Time is actually crucial. Yeah. Even for the kids, parents for their children and so on. It can be time is the most valuable commodity. But of course, it's got to be with that kindness, with caring, and it has, with attention. Another factor that people lack, or we don't get much of in this society too, is attention, because we have people are so busy, they've got so much to do, so they're sort of moving on before they've even really acknowledged the person being there, and that's part of it. So giving attention, listening to people, these are all very important things we can give, and they're not material things. So I'd like to emphasize that, because if you think it's just material giving, then that's very limited. And the things that we really, really need to share are these human qualities, you know, of caring kindness, you know, acceptance, we're talking about this, loving kindness, those things. Very valuable. And people will really appreciate it. And it's you know, something we can do for, we're doing for our own development as well, because we can get better and better. As I say, I said, whatever we repeat, whatever we do a lot of, it will become a habit. It will become what we are good at. So if we develop a lot of loving kindness, we'll become very loving kind people. People will be attracted to us, animals will be attracted to us. And so this is what we can do. We can choose. What do we want? What sort of person do we want to be? You know, do we want to be a loving kind person? Or do we want to be this angry, raging type person who everybody's afraid of? And nobody likes to be near. So now we can do the guided meditation. So there we are, very good. So if you like to do the workout, as I call it, you just move the hips, the shoulders, raise the shoulders just to get them comfortable, and to just to tighten the face around the mouth, the eyes, and the forehead. And let go. And then close the eyes to find, and that way we can find an even more comfortable position. Just to settle the body as best we can. And we can bring to mind an intention for the meditation. We can bring to mind an intention for the meditation, to give to the meditation, give ourselves to the meditation 100%, to give ourselves a gift of just being here now, for this time, just half an hour. This is our time. And we can bring to mind an occasion when we gave something to someone, whether it be a material gift or kindness, attention, advice, whatever we gave. And we felt very pleased with it, very happy with it. And we felt that the other person, maybe they were very happy with it too. It's not necessary. So we can bring to mind some occasion like that. Or if nothing comes to mind, just imagine giving a gift to someone you're close to. Whether it be a physical gift or a gift of kindness, friendliness, attention and time, whatever. And to just to see them very happy with this gift that you're giving. We can see if a feeling comes up from this remembering an actual occasion of giving, or an imagined occasion of giving. Just see if a feeling comes up. If it doesn't, no matter. If we have
feeling from this remembrance or imagination. We can bring it to the body to relax the body mentally, feeling the soothing kindness, starting at the top of the head, the back of the head, all around the head, relaxing it, soothing it, giving it this warm attention, giving it a gift, warm attention. And then moving the attention down the forehead, around the eyes, and around the mouth, and around the cheeks, soothing them, massaging them with the mind, giving it this gift of relaxation. And then moving the attention to the neck, all around the neck, relaxing it, soothing it, allowing it to become comfortable. And then moving the attention to the right shoulder, starting at the neck, and moving this warm, kind attention along the shoulder, relaxing, soothing the right shoulder, softening any tense, tight areas, allowing it to let go. And now we move our attention to the right arm, the upper right arm, and move slowly down the right arm, all around, relaxing, soothing, calming, giving this gift of attention to the elbow or around the elbow, to the lower right arm, moving down the lower right arm, to the wrist, all around the wrist, and then to the palm of the hand and the top of the hand, right to the fingertips, soothing, relaxing. So the whole right arm and the right shoulder, relaxed and comfortable. And now we bring the attention to the left shoulder, starting at the neck, and moving the attention along the left shoulder, with warm attention, relaxing attention along the left shoulder, allowing it to settle down, let go of the burdens of the day, and then moving the attention down the left arm, all around the upper left arm, noticing whatever feelings, sensations there are, and soothing them, any tightness, any hardness, relaxing it, moving the attention to the left elbow, all around the left elbow, and then slowly down the left lower arm, noticing and soothing as we go. To the left wrist, to the top of the left hand, and to the palm of the left hand, right to the fingertips, relax. The whole of the left arm, the shoulder, left shoulder, relaxed, soothed, as comfortable as can be. Now we bring the attention to the back, just below the shoulders, and move the attention down the back, relaxing and soothing as he goes. Any areas that are tight or there is pressure, you can just relax, give them this warm, massaging attention, moving down towards the waist at the back, and then down to the buttocks, and to the legs at the top of the back. Shoulder and arm, at the right shoulder and arm, all relaxed. And now we bring the attention to the front of the body, to just below the shoulders. We move the attention down the chest, this warm, kindly attention. Relaxing attention, moving down towards the stomach, relaxing any pressure attention, and moving down to the abdomen area, relaxing it, soothing it. To the right leg, starting at the top, moving attention around the right thigh, soothing, relaxing as we go, moving down to the knee, all around the knee, down the lower right leg, all around, right down to the ankle, relaxing, soothing. Making it comfortable, down to the foot, to the sole of the foot, the top of the foot, and right to the tips of the toes, relaxing, releasing, soothing. So that the whole right leg is relaxed, and as comfortable as it can be. Attention to the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg, moving the attention around the thigh, this warm, soothing, massaging attention, moving down to the knee, all around the knee, and down the lower left leg, all around. To the ankle, to the sole of the foot, left foot, to the top of the left foot, right to the tips of the toes, relax. Through the whole of the left leg, relaxed, comfortable. The whole of the right leg, relaxed, soothed. Comfortable. The whole of the front of the body and the back of the body, relax. The shoulders and the right arm and the left arm, relax. The neck, the face and the head, all relax. Just sitting with this body, the whole body, perfectly balanced, relaxed. Just aware of sitting with this body. Now become aware of the present moment and give this gift of giving to the present moment, the feeling that we may have developed to the present moment. We can let go of the past, what's happened, who we were. We can be free in the present moment of the past, all the limitations. We're on a holiday in the present moment. We can let go of the future, all those things we're looking forward to or fearing, whichever, just to be here with this feeling of giving to the present moment, whatever we're experiencing, be it the temperature of the air, pressure of the feet on the ground, pressure on the seat. On the cushion, we're sitting on a cushion, feeling the clothes against the body. Whatever we're aware of, moment to moment, moment by moment. And with this sense of giving to the present moment, however it is, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, just letting it be, giving it this gift. Noticing one thing after another. become aware of the breath when it comes to our attention. We can give this gift to the breath, breathing in this friendliness and breathing out, giving, sharing, breathing in friendliness, this warmth, and breathing out, giving, sharing. Bring this warm feeling to the breath.
Thank you.
to the end of the meditation, we can just reflect on how we feel now. Do we feel any more happiness and joy from the idea of giving? Do we feel more peaceful? What do we feel? And what has brought this feeling up? Develop more of this joy and happiness from giving, all the different forms of giving, and we can do this 24/7, not just when we meditate, any time, giving to whoever. And lastly, we can enter this feeling, hopefully the joy of giving, happiness of giving, in the heart, in the mind, so that any time, day or night, we can bring it to mind. And now we can slowly come out of meditation and move the body and open the eyes slowly.
They get brighter.
They get brighter.
There's one question. Oh, question
one
box.
Oh, that's very good. This is a very good thing. People write questions down, because I have noticed after guided meditations they evaporate. People after they've meditated, the questions go, and I'm very pleased because it shows that the thinking has died down for a time, which is very good. But first of all, any questions people have about the meditation, how it went? That's good. Good sign. Good. I'll just answer this. Have a look at this question. So this is a time for comments, questions, or complaints. One meditation I had, loving kindness meditation. I asked for feedback, and a man said he was irritated and annoyed. Well, that didn't work for you. But I said, well, it's good to notice it. You know what mindset you've developed, but work out why you've developed it. But actually, part of the reason, I think, for that man developing, being annoyed and irritated, was he usually came to the silent meditation on the Thursday evening. So he wasn't used to having a lot of guiding and talking. So his mind was a bit irritated by it. And I said, I prefer the first day too. I enjoy the silent meditation. So, how can a layperson let go as a Noble Eightfold Path, let go as Noble Eightfold Path, when they have children, mortgage, bills, and other demanding issues? Yes. How can they let go? Well, it's a matter of what you're letting go of, isn't it, really?
Yes.
The important thing is to let go of the negative things. You know, the negative things in Buddhism, they have three negative roots, they say. And this is greed, you know, thinking of what I want, what I need, what I've got to get. And also anger or aversion, this negative state of mind that's striped out, that's unhappy. And then the other quality is delusion or confusion. Often it's related to this idea of ourself, and that can be a lot of suffering for people, you know, comparing themselves to others, either favourably or unfavourably, or seeing each other as the same. So these are the things we want to let go of. We want to let go of the negative things in our lives. So being having a family, children, mortgage, bills, and other demanding issues is still an opportunity for letting go of negative qualities and developing positive. We can all do it. And the payoff actually is that when we develop the positive qualities, we feel happier. The positive qualities, you know, this idea of giving, this idea of contentment, loving kindness, any thankfulness, any of these positive emotions, they are a condition for us feeling happier, more positive, enjoying life more. Whereas anger and all these, anger, ill will, jealousy, confusion, all these things are a condition for unhappiness, for not enjoying life. So we can do what we can do in our situations. In our life situations, in fact, I think for many people probably agree that family life is a very big opportunity to let go, isn't it? Parents have to let go of what they want to do. And children are not convenient in many ways. They you need to look after them. They're not going to run according to your timetable, your schedule, as much as you would like. And so this is really a big letting go of what we want, you know, and giving to children. And hopefully doing it with a lot of kindness and care and getting that benefit from it. So I think family life, letting go, is a lot of letting go. Just a minute. And one will learn a lot, hopefully, of loving kindness and compassion. And also joy when the children are doing well, when the partner's doing well, things are going well, and they're developing good quality. And also equanimity, we say, this balanced state of mind that knows it's got to let it be. I mightn't like what's happening, it's got to let it be, it will change. So it's a very good opportunity to develop those things. And as I say, you know, this is very much, you know, you have to let go, we have to let go of how we want it to be. And this is a training, actually. And the mortgages and bills and all these things too. We have to be able to keep them in proportion and not let, say, anxiety, worry overtake us, knowing that those qualities won't help at all. Of course we know that, everybody knows that. They're still worrying, don't they? They're still anxious. So those times we need to develop more loving kindness for ourselves, because we're the ones that are anxious or worried, and we're the ones that need the attention, the kind attention. So it's not an obstacle for developing the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the path that the Buddha taught, and it leads to liberation, liberating the mind from all greed, hatred, delusion, to liberating the mind from all suffering, all unsatisfactoriness, and experiencing that Buddha talked about, the highest happiness. So if that didn't sound any fun, but it certainly... The Buddha's teaching is actually, as the path develops, it gets happier and happier. So this is not an obstacle to developing the Noble Eightfold Path. Most of the people, most of the Buddhists in the world, are not monastics or not monks, not nuns. They're lay people. And at the time of the Buddha, that was the same. and many at the time of the quite a few at the time of the Buddha developed stages of enlightenment in lay life. So it is possible. We always say that with the Buddha said, as long as there is this teaching of the path, the Noble Eightfold Path, there will be enlightened beings. And this is a possibility for all of us. And also, I stress, I often say, when I, the centre I teach in Melbourne, I was a layperson there. Over 20 years ago, I was a layperson there. I used to work in the library there. So I tell people there that the Buddhist path has got four different, they call them assemblies, four different categories. There are lay men, lay women, monks and nuns. But it's not a fixed, they're not fixed boundaries, that one can migrate from the one to the other. So many lay people, some lay people, not many, will become monks and nuns. And then some monks and nuns will become lay people again, this happens as well. So it's a bit of a, it's not a fixed boundary, but of course, the Buddha said, you know, if one can become a monk or a nun, it's very, very beneficial, because the opportunity to practice meditation, develop wisdom, is much easier without a lot of responsibilities, a lot of duties, a lot of roles we have to play as mothers, fathers, different occupations that we're in, and so on. So of course, you know, it is, it would have often said, you know, the most fertile ground, that's how he expressed it, actually, the most fertile ground for developing enlightenment. So that's what I would say to this person. How can a lay person let go as a Noble Eightfold Path when they have children, mortgage bills and other demanding issues? And I always like the Tibetan Buddhist nun who had a book. I never read the book, but I love the title, Start From Where You Are. I think that's very good. And we can work with wherever we are. We can develop good qualities wherever we are, you know. So this is, you know, the life is an opportunity for that. And as I mentioned before, it's up to us. It's up to us what we develop. If we want to become really positive, happy people, we can do that. If we want to become grumpy, negative people, we can do that too. But we're the ones that have to decide which is the better deal. And I think that's pretty easy to tell, actually. So thank you for that question. I hope that answered the question. You had, yes?
I know I've asked you more questions, but I've probably got more trouble of mind than most people. Is it wrong to be selfish in the respect that you better sort yourself out before you can sort of sort the world's problems out?
I think, is it wrong to sort yourself out first before you can sort out the world's problems?
No,
that's, you have to start at home.
Because I was trying to think, you know, like I'm not a good person because, like, I'm not.
I think
doing
this
everything
is
for everybody, and I'm trying to sort myself out. You know, like I just feel that's like kind of selfish, but.
No, I think we have to develop the qualities we want to give to the world. We have to develop those qualities first. So for yourself, for all of us actually, we have to have a lot of acceptance, loving kindness for ourselves. If we want to give loving kindness to the world, and that's what it needs, we have to develop it. You know, so you're working on yourself is actually a great investment. And that's what the spiritual path is about, isn't it? It's working on ourselves. And if we do work on ourselves very successfully, as it were, developing more positive, wholesome qualities, people are going to get the benefits. You know, if you've got loving kindness in your own, towards yourself, it's very likely that when you encounter people, it will be there for them as well, you know. So whatever we have, we can give. If we don't have it, pretty hard to give.
So you've got to spend a lot of time on yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Before you start sort of like trying to help everybody else.
That's correct.
Is it a balance thing?
That's very much the case, because as I say, what we've developed we can share and we can give. But if we haven't got it, if we haven't got peace, if we haven't got loving kindness for ourselves, very hard to give to others, actually. Impossible, actually. It's a bit like, if you want to give money and you have none in your pocket, can't do. That's it. So this work on ourselves is actually, it's not selfish, because others will benefit from it. We will benefit from it. And often in the Buddha's, when the Buddha's talking about, you know, how we should decide and with what we say and do, he says, first of all, it shouldn't harm us. It shouldn't harm others. And it shouldn't harm both. You know, so, and benefit should be the same. It should be a benefit to us. Benefit to others, if possible, to benefit to both. You know, so,
Thank you.
So very good, very good. We have to start at home. It's like I always say too, the five precepts. You know, people often talk about world peace, but it's sort of like a big idea, isn't it? And people like to get manifestos and countries sign and whatnot. But actually, each of us can contribute to world peace by keeping five precepts. These are the Buddhist five precepts of not undertaking the training rule to refrain from killing living beings, undertaking the training rule to refrain from taking what's not given, undertaking the rule to refrain from the training rule, to refrain from sexual misconduct, to refrain from lying, refraining from taking alcohol and drugs. Those five precepts, if the person keeps those, that's a great contribution to world peace. It's a beginning, you know, to world peace. So very much it starts at home. If we can do it, we can give it. So this is very important, the work on ourselves. Because if we try to work on society, if we try to benefit society with a lot of negative mind states, what good is that going to be? We may have the best intentions in mind, but where we're coming from is not right, not good, it's not wholesome. So it's very important we get that right first, come from the right place, and then we can help others.
Selfish is not really the right word.
No, I probably, yeah. But some people think like that. I think that's fair enough to say that. People would, you know, they often think, you know.
Self-esteem.
Yep, self-esteem, very important. So, I don't know if there are any other questions before we finish off. Yes.
I was also interested when you were talking about in the beginning part of the meditation for the terminally ill, or you mentioned something on that. Is there we've got a family member that's quite sick?
Yes.
And is there someone who specialises, or is there books on someone who specialises on that?
On terminally ill people, and there are, I think, quite a few books on what we can do for people who are dying, you know, and very much the thrust of it is to bring out more positive states of mind for them, you know, like to encourage them to think about the good things that have happened in their lives, the things that they've done that were good, not to focus on the things that didn't go right, or, you know, that could have been better, to bring up those states of mind and a sense of resolution, acceptance of things. Have loving kindness for themselves, you know, these sort of positive emotions. But there are quite a few books, if you look on the internet, you know, around this area, you know, palliative care, people who are dying.
I thought you mentioned that there was someone that already did that.
But yeah, there are quite a few people who do focus on that, and I think it's a really important time, actually, when you're with someone who's dying. Because it's a very real time for them, you know, they're really focused in the moment. Maybe it's painful, it's difficult, and accepting the fact that their life is ending and their unfinished business, this is a part of it. Trying to help them come to terms with unfinished business is good, and forgiveness is enormous.
I think you mentioned a name earlier on, that's right.
Yeah, he works a lot with people who are have terminal illnesses, long-term survivors too, people who had, you know, terrible cancers and stuff and come back, and what worked for them. So yeah, he has in Victoria, Yarra Valley, I think it is, Yarra River, he has a centre and teaches meditation aimed at that. And there's books that he's written to Ian Gorland. So if you look on the internet, he's very inspiring because he had very advanced cancer, and you see pictures of these incredible, you know, sores and coming up from underneath, and they,
from under the skin, and they had to amputate one of his legs, and then he got into meditation and it completely went. He's a very inspiring speaker, actually. I saw him years ago and I thought he was really, really good, very good, because it's a life and death situation, and he managed with meditation to come back, do look him up, Ian Gorman. Yes, that's very good.
G-A-W-L-E-R.
Yeah, he's now a Sir. He got recognised for his work. But I will end with a story. Maybe I have to say a story of, because he didn't have any stories, but there's actually two stories, but still. One story is of a monk whom I know, actually, who, Sajjan Jayasaro, is an English monk who lives in Thailand. And he's very... when he was young, he had this great burning desire to go to India and be a sadhu or a yogi in a cave. And he did that. He went to India at something like 17, 18, 19, around there, went overland all the way. And then on the way back, he was going back to England after, I don't know how long he was there, quite a long time, I think, living in a cave, encountering other yogis, learning a lot, living with very little. And when he went back, evidently he made a determination that he wouldn't take money. Somebody told me this, actually, and that he would just live on, people's kindness, just to see how that went. I think it's pretty courageous. And anyway, he got to Tehran, and he was down and out, no money, he didn't have it, and his clothing was all shabby, and I think he had even lost his passport at this stage. And he must have looked a bit of a case, because a woman on the street saw him and grabbed him by the arm. He didn't know what she had in mind, dragged him off. She must have looked a bit motherly, so he probably thought, no, it's not like that. And dragged him off, took him up to her apartment, and her son was there, and she made food for him, and she got the son, she got clothes out, her son's clothes presumably, and gave them to him, and got the son to take him to the bathroom, have a wash, and clean up, and he had a good meal, and had all this food and everything, and then she got the son to take him back down to the street, and let him go. And he was amazed. I'm pretty amazed. Would a complete stranger do that? How could a complete stranger do that? How amazing. But then he thought, oh, my mum and dad have been doing this for year in, year out, giving me clothes, food, and washing facility. So that was a nice reflection for him. But the generosity of people is extraordinary, the kindness. And they're not, Buddhists, or they're not necessarily, these are Muslim people, presumably, in Tehran. And kindness and generosity are human values. Giving is a human value. And it's really, when you experience things like that, very touching, you realize this is part of humanity, actually, part of being human is giving and having that joy. The other story I will tell is more humorous. And this is the story of Nasruddin, who is a Sufi holy man or teacher, sometimes a bit of a scoundrel too, actually. And he was, as I said, a Sufi teacher. And one day he was in the village and he encountered two beggars. And he was very careful about giving to beggars. And the beggars obviously wanted him to give them some money. And so he had a questionnaire for them. He asked the beggars, "Do you smoke? Do you... go to the bar, this is Turkey, do you drink with friends?" and so on. And the first beggar said, yes I do. And the second beggar said, "No, I don't." And then Nasruddin got out a gold coin and he gave it to the first beggar. And the second beggar, he gave a copper coin to. And he said to the second beggar, "His need, the other beggar, is greater than yours." It's a complete opposite of what we would think. We usually say, "Give the gold coin to the one who doesn't want much." So I hope that's a good, that's an interesting point. This is the nice thing with these Nasruddin stories; they're always funny, and they make you look at things a little bit differently. You don't always agree with it. So I hope the evening has been useful, and very nice to see you all again. And I hope next year. No, maybe later this year I will be here again.
On behalf of the group, Arjun, thank you very much for your talk tonight. And yes, we would like to see you next year if you remember us.
Yes.
Thank you.